Hello and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are turning towards life again for our 445th episode, I think, Justin. I got it right for the first time, probably ever, knowing what number we were on, just because last week was 444, and I thought, I think I could do adding one on. So we're episode number 445, which is amazing. And we are in the midst of our Turning Towards Life live season, so we are now supported by an even more rich contact with our community, Justin, as we do this. So I'm feeling the double whammy of being here doing our episode, but also being in our live group with actual people on Zoom who are joining us every month. And it's quite something to feel like that. So we have a source chosen by Justin this week, and we are going to head right into this and see how this unfolds. If, as ever, you would like to find the source, you can go to the show notes on any podcast platform, or you can go to our website, turningtowards.life, where you can also find out about Turning Towards Life Live and our next season coming up. The topic is going to be love. So if you would like to join in, you can take a look at that and see what the shape of it all is on our website. We would love to have you in our next season, which is starting in a few months' time. The topic we're covering at the moment is something called healthy power. And already, Justin, it's shaping up to be a really wonderful, rich set of conversations, isn't it? So thank you for all of those who are in Turning Towards Life Live, who might be listening to the podcast as their normal kind of routine. And hello to everybody who's new. Hello to everybody who's not so new. And wherever you're listening, if you're on the dog walk, if you're trying to get to sleep, if you're in some kind of treatment, if you're doing exercise, if you're sitting quietly with the sun shining on your face in your living room, whatever you're doing, we welcome you and thank you for being here with us. This is quite an extraordinary community, and I feel very lucky to be a part of it. Thank you. Hello, Justin.
Hello, Lizzie.
Hello, everyone. I just want to add to everything you've said, Lizzie, that on turningtowards.life on the website, as well as finding your way to Turning Towards Life Live, which is a way to be with us in real time and with a community of other people, you can also sign up for our weekly emails and you get the source and links to the conversations into your inbox every week. You can support us. There are people who are metaphorically buying cups of coffee, one-off, sometimes weekly or monthly, to support this project, which is so welcome. But the other thing I wanted to just draw attention to is this whole conversation was born from something called Third Space. And one of the big things, well, you know this, Lizzie, but one of the big things that we're up to in Third Space is helping people become integral development coaches, having the kinds of conversations with others in the world that really support flourishing. And we are heading towards the beginning of our year-long professional coaching course. So on the Turning Towards Life website, there is a link that you can follow to find out about all of that. And Lizzie, you and I have recorded, I don't know, about six conversations about this as well over time. So all of our conversations about that are there. And then a link through to the Third Space website. And I'm just saying it now because it's April 2026. In May, we have our two-day Foundations of Coaching introduction to all of this coming up online, accessible from anywhere in the world. And then in July, the year-long program starts. So it was always good just to say that that's coming and that there's a place that you can find out about it. And now this source. So you can find the source, as you said, Lizzie, in all of those places. And it's by Martin Buber. And I'm going to read and then you're going to read. And I will say just one thing before we read. There's one term in here which might be unfamiliar. It begins with these words, the Baal Shem teaches. The Baal Shem was the person who was the founder of Hasidic Judaism, which is one particular path in the Jewish world. The Baal Shem teaches that no encounter with a being or a thing in the course of our life lacks a hidden significance. The people we live with or meet with, the animals that help us with our farm work, the soil we till, the materials we shape, the tools we use, they all contain a mysterious spiritual substance which depends on us for helping it towards its pure form, its perfection. If we neglect this spiritual substance sent across our path, if we think only in terms of momentary purposes without developing a genuine relationship to the beings and things in whose life we ought to take part as they in ours, then we shall ourselves be debarred from true fulfilled existence. It's my conviction that this doctrine is essentially true. The highest culture of the soul remains basically arid and barren unless day by day waters of life pour forth into the soul from those little encounters to which we give their due. The most formidable power is intrinsically powerless until it maintains a secret covenant with these contacts, both humble and helpful, with strange and yet near being.
Thank you, Justin. The Baal Shem teaches that no encounter with a being or thing in the course of our life lacks a hidden significance. The people we live with or meet with, the animals that help with our farm work, the soil we till, the materials we shape, the tools we use, they all contain a mysterious spiritual substance which depends on us for helping it toward its pure form, its perfection. If we neglect this spiritual substance sent across our path, if we think only in terms of momentary purposes, without developing a genuine relationship to the beings and things in whose life we ought to take part, as they in ours, then we shall ourselves be debarred from true fulfilled existence. It is my conviction that this doctrine is essentially true. The highest culture of the soul remains basically arid and barren unless day by day waters of life pour forth into the soul from those little encounters to which we give their due. The most formidable power is intrinsically powerlessness unless it maintains a secret covenant with these contacts, both humble and helpful, with strange and yet near being.
One of the things that I've been sitting with this one for a long time, Lizzie. It's been in my list of sources I wanted to bring. And I partly found my way to it because of because of what it says about power, and we're in this conversation about healthy power in Turning Towards Life Life. So it's sort of, it's on my radar. I feel sensitive to it. But the other way into it for me is you and I, through these years of having this conversation, have talked about many, many times about the ordinary and the mundane, about what it is to wash the dishes or stack the dishwasher. In fact, I think that's the domain of human life that we've come back to most often, because it's so full of significance and sometimes conflict. And I was really moved by this idea, this invitation from Martin Buber and the Baal Shem, that we could treat every single something, starting with the objects that we use and extending to all the animals in our lives, and of course including the people and the trees and the sky and the buildings, that we could be ones who, instead of treating all of these things as just ordinary and trivial and flat and meaningless, we could treat every single something that we come across as if it were invested with deep secret significance. I think that's what's being asked of us here. And I suppose that I find it particularly important because, I mean, on so many different levels, but one is, the most obvious one is, it's so easy to treat ourselves and the people who we meet as if we don't have this. Like as if somehow the person who drives the bus or serves the coffee or who I pass on the street or who is my colleague or my spouse or my child or my friend, as if somehow they were nothing and that we were nothing. It's really easy to live that way, to sort of live with ourselves and with others in a sort of dismissive way. And it's easy to do that with it's just as easy to do that with the miraculous, you know, I've got a cup of tea here, and I'm just, because of this conversation, I'm thinking about who made the mug, who designed the mug, how did the mug get designed, what were all the materials it took, how did the tea get here, what kinds of love were poured into making this, not just my own. And I think that this invitation here is an invitation, even in the midst of maybe the greatest difficulty, maybe this is when we most need it, to see the world as a shining, significant, sacred something, everything from the people to the teacups, to the tap, to the plug, to the dishwasher, to the rubbish bag in my bin. So that's the first part. It seems to me that it's inviting us to live in a way that I think is deeply countercultural, actually, which is everything matters, everything is significant, everything is worthy of our care. But the second part of it that I just want to say now, whilst it's on my mind, is there's this brilliant line where he says, if we neglect this without developing a genuine relationship to the beings and things in whose life we ought to take part, it's a participative invitation. Like, what is it to have a genuine relationship and take part in the life of a teacup or a dishwasher or a friend or a colleague? What is it to allow myself to be a participant with this in mind? And it seems so important to me because so many of the conversations I've been having recently, and I know that when I'm in the most trouble, Lizzie, is very often when I forget that I am also an expression of this world. I am, like everything that we're talking about here, I am being made by, brought forth by the participation of everything around me with me. I'm never on my own. I'm never alone in the world, even when I feel very alone. And I'm grateful for Martin Buber writing over 100 years ago for drawing our attention to that, for trying to help us not forget.
It's really wonderful, Justin, for me to feel into this thing that you're saying, that there is a way we can be in relationship to everything, and that that's one of our powers, is that we can be in relationship in ways that we intend, in ways that feel, you know, that one of the words in here is a fulfilled existence. Like, what a question to live with. What is it? How might I be in relationship? What, or how am I in relationship that has me feel fulfilled versus a relationship that made me kind of leave me feeling empty or detached or like a consumer or something, like I'm using everything, but I'm not being filled up by it. I was just thinking, we're doing lots of gardening in our house at the moment. I mean, we've got the tiniest set of flower beds. I'm not sure I could call it gardening, but we're planting tomatoes and a couple of pumpkins. And there's a way I could be really utilitarian about that. You know, like, well, we're going to plant this and then it's going to make some food and then we're going to eat it. I can feel, though, that there's magic in it. Every time I plant a seed and something happens, I literally have pure disbelief that something happened from this set of brown stuff and a seed. And it's literally the most miraculous thing to watch a little seed come forth and sprout, and then actual tomatoes when they come in the summer. I don't know what to do with myself, and how exciting it is that there's a fruit that's been born out of this tiny seed that we planted. And there's all kinds of ways that we could relate to everything. That could be really boring. You know, it could be really boring doing the tomatoes and the thing. It's quite a lot of work. I had to build a frame with sticks, but it is the way I can be in relationship with it, and to give those sticks significance, and to give the little ties significance, and to allow the soil to have its significance. And what I love about this is it doesn't use the word, I don't think it uses the word meaning anywhere, but it allows it to be significant. But there's a mystery to significance, because maybe I could articulate its significance, but even if I can't, that it is significant feels like a big thing. To treat something as significant, even when I don't know it for its significance yet, but to know that it is significant. And I don't have to make meaning of it, but I could treat it sacredly. I could treat it like a piece of life that deserves my tender, attentive, reflective holding. And I could see everything as the process that it is, rather than the thing that gives me what I want or the thing that does the job that I need doing, even though those things maybe really matter. That doesn't feel to me like it's going to fill my heart and existence up with the voluptuousness of life and the richness that's available. And to feel into a tree or the soil or you or my glasses. I mean, my glasses get a lot of mistreatment because I use them every day. And in this moment, I'm feeling a bit apologetic to my glasses because they get thrown around and told off all the time for being lost and all those things. But they're really significant. They help me see. They help me actually see things and be clear and for my eyes not to hurt. And so I'm feeling reconnected and also reminded of that beautiful David White poem about the saucepans and the taps talking to us. And feeling that there is a possibility for that moment-to-moment acknowledgement and allowing of significance to be present, both in ourselves. I was listening to Ray yesterday, Justin, who you now know, the wonderful Ray, a recording artist and writer and composer and everything. And she has this beautiful song called Joy, which I would recommend everybody needs to whack up loud on the hi-fi and listen to. It's so beautiful. But in there, there's a repeated line that says, I am somebody. And when she says, I am somebody, I think it's this, which is that, like you were saying, it's a chance for us to see and feel ourselves as significant, even with a tiny bit of knowing that we're here. That is true. I am somebody. And yet, so much of our inner worlds could tell us that we aren't, that we're not somebody, that we're not significant. And yet we really are. And I want to, I guess, name this feeling of connectedness that I'm in as we're having the conversation, to feeling into, even though I probably know myself like 0.1% in real terms of the vastness of me, as long as I can say I'm significant, I open the pathways to knowing myself because I'm worth looking at and I'm worth studying and I'm worth being with to find out more.
I'm so moved by what you're saying, Lizzie. I was really touched by this word significance that you brought up, and it struck me that maybe this is what Martin Buber is writing about here, is that it's one of the great possibilities of being a human. It's one of our great, I was going to say talents, maybe that's true, but it's also something intrinsic to our way of being is significance. That we are able to uncover, to discover, to find our way to the significance of what is around us because things matter to us, because we care. Because essentially to be human is to care. And I don't mean that in a, just in the sort of soft, lovely way of caring. I mean in this way of mattering. And so it's such a thing to sit here as you talk and to feel my heart swell and stir with the feeling of you mattering and me mattering, and then the rooms we are in mattering, and the way that all the people who are listening to us matter, the way all of this significance that there is. And it's such a different story from the world being empty and flat and pointless, the sort of nihilistic story that nothing is anything, nothing amounts to anything. Actually just sitting here with you and looking at you and letting myself be in receipt of your significance is incredibly tender and touching. And then as that's happening, I'm letting myself be in receipt of my own significance. And David White's poem, which I don't know if we've ever used as a source, and we should probably circle round to it, begins that poem, which I think is, I can't remember the name of it for the moment, begins that your great mistake is to act the drama of your life as if you were alone. And here, this is what this conversation and this source is reminding us. One of the things about this source that really I I think is important is that Martin Buber is saying not only, oh, wouldn't it be a lovely thing to do to invest everything with significance? He's also saying it's like it's a responsibility. It's like a duty we have. It's what it is to be human, is that we're meant to do this. We're not meant to turn the world into something flat. We're not meant to turn ourselves into consumers of everything. We're not meant to turn everybody else and everything into something to be consumed. We are meant to greet the world with a kind of awe and wonder. And of course, this source is also about love. We're meant to, and this is a Mary Oliver line, we're meant to love this world, which is full of terrors and horrors and harm and full of beauties and wonders. And but it's our job to be in covenant with this. And covenant is such a great word, because covenant, it implies promise, relationship, reciprocity. It is our calling to enter into reciprocity, relationship, wonder, awe, and care with the world. And I think that's why he says that even the most formidable power is intrinsically powerlessness unless it includes this. Because my sense of it is that if we try to have power by stripping everything of its meaning, by dominating everything as if it were consumable, where it ends is a very kind of deep powerlessness, because we may get our way for a while. I may get what I want for a while, but along the way, I will strip myself and everything in my life of the depth and meaning that was already here. And so it's a kind of brittle power. It's a false power. And that our real powers come with reverence. I mean, there's so many different words we could use here. That's the word. I mean, that comes with reverence, with according dignity to that which is around us. And that's a very different kind of power from the kind of grasping, controlling source of power that we might otherwise occupy, particularly when we're afraid.
Mm. It's so wonderful. That's what you're uncovering from that second paragraph, Justin. And I'm thinking of all of our ways of being powerful as human beings, and how wonderful that to bring this into our daily life and to bring significance, the field of being, you know, allowing significance to be here and whatever is in front of us, and we're making contact with humans, things, soils, tools. If that's where this formidable power exists, as in that's a kind of gateway to feeling powerful, to being powerful, is to treat all of these mini and major contact points in life as significant, and having that as what we would define as power feels like a very different life to where we're seeking out, as you say, to have control over what we want to control and to kind of shut things down so it's manageable or whatever. But what a different life to be participating in, where our own sense of our powerfulness can come forth, maybe in the big events of our lives, but mostly in the everyday dishwashering, growing tomatoes, walking down the street, going to the shop to get your milk. It's all available all the time. We don't have to find that every circumstance is meeting exactly what we need it to in order to feel powerful and like we have power in ourselves. We could be participating in life in line with this invitation, and to let the significance of what's in front of us be part of us. It seems to me it's also an invitation to inclusion, to feeling and experiencing the world in the feel of non-separateness, because we're in relationship. So it's like the relationship to things connects us, and in that connection, then non-separateness can find us. So I am not separate to the soil that I'm fiddling with in the garden to try and have these tomatoes flourish. And my hands aren't separate from the gloves that I'm using to protect me from all the thorns of the roses that are nearby. And those roses are not separate from me, and I'm not separate from them. And so to feel myself in relationship is a very different life than just to be using things and to be moving things around or something, although that is also happening. There's also a depth here that's available that feels like it can do exactly what it says here of having a fulfilled existence, moving through the world in a way that could fill me up with existence is such a different life than I know myself really well in this realm of the galloping, consuming, enthusiastic, wanting, wishing, hoping, imagining. And all of that's wonderful. And it's part of my energy and my vibrancy in the world, of course. But it's quite possible that I could gobble everything up and not even remember that I ate it in the first place, unless I imbue my life with this kind of attentive, gentle, and open presence that allows me to actually receive and be fulfilled rather than gobbling and not really experiencing or having any memory of anything, which I know I've had that feeling a lot of times.
Letting myself be very impacted and touched by the words that you're using, Lizzie, that non-separateness from everything and attention. I think you just said attentiveness and receiving, that in the midst of whatever we're up to, whatever projects we've engaged in, whatever purposes we've taken up, that it's within the gift of us humans to remember that we belong, that we're not separate, that we are the soil and the soil is us, and we are the rose and the rose is us, and we are the teacup and the teacup is us. And it's actually true because we're deeply enmeshed in this world. We cannot extricate ourselves from it. And here it is, all made of the same something. And that we always have the gift of attentiveness and care, like a sort of an ethic of care rather than of use.
Mm-hmm.
You said this at the start, and I've been meaning to pick up on it. Right at the very start, you talked about how one of the possibilities for us humans is to choose how we're in relationship. Like, we're always in relationship with everything around us, and the way in which we relate is not a given. We make it by how we live, by how we direct our attention, by what we pay attention to, by the way in which we allow ourselves to receive from what came before us and what's here. They are all made by us. And I think that it's clear to me that the conversation that we're in here is really this conversation about what ways of being in relationship allow us to be fully in the world, allow us to be fulfilled, allow us to take up our places, allow us to bring forth a world that we want to live in. This is the refrain that's been in my mind for a while. And I think we might have talked about this last week. What's the world we want to live in? And who are the people we want to be in the world? And what kind of way of relating brings that forth? Rather than imagining that when I buy that product or have that makeup or have that bag or get the job or whatever, then I'll be the kind of person I want to be. Bringing about the world I want to bring, it doesn't depend upon those things. Those things exist in and of themselves. This is the question that's possible to ask right in every moment. In every moment, how am I taking part, and how are we taking part in this shared existence that we share with teacups and people and roses and pumpkins and planets in the sky?
I was just thinking, Justin, this feels hard to articulate. But the circumstances of our lives don't have to be perfect in order to feel like we're alive and that we could find fulfillment of existence, of existing here. And I think that's how I'm kind of what I'm taking away from this conversation with me, and I'm going to hold on to is it's not that everything has to be right and perfect before this happens. This can happen in spite of whatever kerfuffle we're in spite of whatever circumstances and health and finance and family arguments and whatever. This way of wondering and being is like we get the chance not to get to the end of our life and think, oh, I never even lived because I was so taken up by all of the issues and all of the problems and all of the everythings. I just didn't get filled up by being a human being. And so there's this other track running the whole way, which is an opportunity, a benevolent, ever benevolent opportunity to turn towards the significance of everyone and everything. That would be a way of feeling full and fulfilled in spite of, I mean, I'm not, sometimes things are too hard. I know that, you know, sometimes it just feels too hard, but there are always ordinary moments like falling asleep or drinking something. And I'm feeling invited into the ordinariness of those moments and letting them be imbued by fulfillment of existence.
Oh, a beautiful place to end. Lizzie, thank you as always for such a joy and a wonder to be in this conversation with you and to bring sources that we don't know where they're going to go. And I keep on finding myself opened and deepened and widened by hearing what you have to say and speaking and hearing what you have to say and this reciprocity that happens in conversation together. It's a real gift. So thank you for being here again. And thank you, everyone. We know that this conversation lives between us and all of you and then inside each of you who are listening. And then often you have these conversations with other people. We got a lovely message this week of a study group who had one of these conversations be one of their sources and resources for their study group. And we also know that many of you are telling other people about this conversation because we can see the reach growing, and you're so welcome to tell others. And then a reminder, you can find your way back to turningtowards.life, where there are all the ways of connecting with us and contacting us and supporting this and finding out about the other things that we're doing. And we'll end here, and all being well, we'll be back next week. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.